Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
What's up, buds?
Sending it back in along the left-hand side. 7:40 to go. Puck in front. Connolly with a chance. And they score! They score! The puck on a rebound for Lars Eller. Eller gets the rebound and puts it home. And Washington leads it. 4-3 with 7:37 to go. The Tiger pouncing at the moment that he can potentially be the hero.
Welcome back to Japers Rink Radio. I'm your host, Adam Stringham. Today I'm happy to be joined by Greg Young and the one and only John Press. John, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Can't complain. All things considered, given the state of the world, I'm doing quite all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. As good as you can be. Little one's getting very close to a year old, so that's crazy. My dad's actually in town, so that's nice, but... it's nice to be around lots of people that you know, and that doesn't happen very often, which, you know, Greg, you're like off on your own in the wilderness. How are things over in Europe?
They're good. I'm currently in the Netherlands, sitting in, I guess what I would call a glorified dorm room, charitably called a studio apartment, and things are going well here. The only downside is, as we're recording this, it's 11:50 at night. So, you know, if I do a yawn or two, that'll be why.
Well, nothing says that our contents, like you yawning, Greg.
Well, okay. Can I also say though, the JP got the one and only, but I did not. So, you know, I feel like the expectations for my content might be a little lower from you.
All right. Well, you know, we'll learn to deal with low energy, Greg. so let's talk a little bit, guys. I mean, the preseason has started. The Capitals dropped their opener to Boston. Wasn't the most exciting game, but it had some exciting moments, and it was kind of our first chance to see kind of all the Capitals' young players that they've drafted over the last 2 years. Given that we didn't have a preseason last year, before we kind of talk about the guys that we expect to make the squad, you know, addition, subtraction, did either of you? Well, I guess I don't even know if you guys watched the game, but assuming you did anybody stand out to you? Starting with you, John.
I did not watch a moment of that game, but I can tell you that Dylan McIlrath stood out in not great ways, both when he was doing dumb things and when he was trying to actually play hockey. And as a result, he probably you probably won't be seeing him in a Caps uniform anytime soon. I think that they brought him in. I wouldn't say they brought a guy in for one game in particular, but I do think that he probably would have broken camp with the team and played in that opening night Rangers shit show if not for this four-game suspension. Two preseason games, two regular season games that he got. So now he would have to serve those. And so I don't know that they'll have much utility for him beyond that Rangers game. So missed opportunity, lost opportunity for him. But he is what we thought he was, which is not a terribly talented or NHL caliber player. Otherwise, I heard good things about Hendricks, LaPierre, heard some mixed things about McMichael and Alexeyev, but, first game. You also got to remember, for some of these guys, it's really the first game in a long, long time, because some of these guys had their seasons canceled last year due to COVID and whatnot, and or at the very least cut short. So, obviously, I'm not putting too much weight in any performances from that game or the next handful or any of them, really. But that's a long way of saying, no, I did not watch that game.
Greg, what about you? Did you bother to stay up till 1 or 2 in the morning to watch that game?
I cannot say that I did. I did watch the highlights the next day. I just got to sit and admire JP, who is the real pro here. He didn't watch a game and managed to expound upon it for a couple of minutes there. I'm impressed. I think it's also one I didn't watch, and actually two, I think it's justified not to watch these games a little bit. It's for a couple of reasons. It's something JP talked about earlier, which is that this is the first hockey game that a lot of these people have played in a very long time. And we forget with COVID, and how much junior leagues and how much, the semi or the, kind of developmental leagues have been delayed and everything like that. So, it's hard for anyone to really look at one game, or I would even say pretty much the whole preseason, and really take anything of serious value from it. And the other thing that's worth considering, too, is that the lineups aren't particularly stable in preseason games. Coaches are going to try different things. Players are going to try different roles. And, the odds are that Laviolette's looking at those games less as a really caring about them winning and more just kind of a, hey, let's try LaPierre. Let's see how the kid looks. Let's see how McMichael looks. And, I just think the amount of that analytical value that you're going to get from these games is pretty slim.
Well, as the only one here who watched the game, albeit I was on a tape delay. I thought it was fine. I mean, no one really stood out to me. I mean, JP did nail it. I thought McRat was just a total, reckless hit, been just awful. Glad he got suspended. Was really not a fan. And it was nice to see the young kids in the lineup, even if they really didn't put a ton of points up except for LaPierre. So, preseason is preseason, as JP said, not a lot to really look into, but it was nice to see the Caps back on the ice. And as the preseason goes on, we'll get to see kind of the big guys. Ovechkin, we didn't see against the Bruins, and we get to see him now. A couple guys we won't be seeing, really the most important one is Brendan Dillon, who the Capitals did offload immediately after the expansion draft. John, I know some of the fan base felt there was a pretty big split on Dillon. Some guys really liked him. They thought that he brought a lot of sandpaper. He had good kind of underlying numbers. But, I could say from my own experience, I didn't really like him. I didn't think that he moved the puck particularly well, and I thought way too many possessions died with him. What were kind of your thoughts on Dillon, and what do you think his departure means for how the roster's going to shake out?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I thought he was fine. He had his moments. I don't think he was worth the money he was making and the commitment that they had left on that contract. So I wasn't upset to see him go for a couple picks, one of which they turned around and flipped to Seattle to bring Vitek Vanacek back. In a curious move, you wonder almost why Seattle hadn't just taken Dylan and then flipped him for two picks instead. But in any event, you know, I think you're right. He wasn't a particularly skilled puck mover, of course. That's not what he was here to do. I kind of worry about a guy like that this year, especially there's this new theoretical crackdown on cross-checking, right? Yeah. It's going to be a point of emphasis that they're not going to let all that, all those little cross-checks to the kidneys go. And, you know, for a quote-unquote stay-at-home defenseman who's a crease clearer or whatever terminology you want to use, that takes away one of their major tools or their major methods of doing that crease clearing. So, I mean, Dylan's already a guy who racks up tons of penalties. And if they really, if they're serious about eliminating this cross-checking stuff, that's going to be even more. So I don't mind losing a guy like that. Hopefully it makes room for a Ferravari, you know, maybe Alexeyev, and a guy like even a guy like TVR to get into the lineup. Maybe also we'll see where Michael Kempney is and that kind of thing. They just had a very crowded blue line, and it was blocking up the chance for some of the younger guys that they want to take a look at. And so, you know, I think that I don't think that they'll miss his contributions, although I don't think he was a terrible player or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely can understand that. He was kind of that kind of middle pairing defenseman. Greg, any quick thoughts on Dylan, or more importantly, the departures of Craig Anderson or Michael Raffel?
Really, really giving me the murderer's row there. I think with Dylan, that I almost wonder, and I think I've speculated on this before, if he actually was a little bit miscast in his role. I think the Caps saw him as a bit of a defensive defenseman, kind of put him with Carlson a lot, and he never really seemed to thrive in that role. And it was curious to me that the one player he did thrive with was the actually defensive-oriented Trevor Van Riemsdyk. So, you know, that was interesting to me, but I agree. I mean, Dylan was clearly overpaid for the role that they were giving him. And when you have a Caps roster that's capped out and they needed to extend Ovechkin, that kind of made sense. I mean, in an ideal world, I think you can question whether, like, you know, could they have gotten something for Justin Schultz instead? Because I really wasn't impressed with him last year. But, you know, I think, you know, that was a perfectly reasonable decision by Brian McCullen. And really getting 2 seconds for Dylan was not a bad return. I thought it was going to be worse than that. So, yeah, like, I think that was fine. In terms of Michael Raffel, it's fine. You know, I don't think that was ever going to be a long-term thing. And Craig Anderson got himself a starting job, I think, right, in Buffalo, which is fascinating to me why he'd want to end his career there. But, you know, there you go. So, Craig, you were way better in the playoffs than I thought you would be. And then you probably got tired and hurt. And so that was a bummer. But I'll have fond memories for the Craig Anderson era as a Washington Capitals goalie.
Yeah, he did play pretty well in the playoffs. Let's move on a little bit to talk about, well, first off, I don't really have the Capitals having had any truly notable new players coming into the team. Do either of you feel differently about any of their additions?
I sure don't. I mean, what are we talking about here? Matt Irwin? You know, I think the biggest impact player, well, I mean, they did make that deal to get that goaltender Vanacek. So yeah, that's a big change.
I was not including his cup of tea.
Yeah, that's a big change from last year.
Big change.
You know, I think that hopefully if you're the Caps, you're hoping that your biggest new contributors are going to be some of those guys who've been in Hershey marinating for a little while, you know, and, you know, you hope that it's Connor McMichael. You hope that it's Alexeyev. You hope that it's Ferravari. You know, it's these are the guys that you probably need to step up. And, you know, obviously they were incredibly limited in what they could do in the offseason, in part, you know, mostly because of the cap. And I think we can get to some of that stuff, related issue, in a minute or two. But so, you know, it's time. They're going to probably, to an extent, sink or swim based on what kind of contributions they can get from those players, and not any type of free agents or trades that they made over the summer.
Now, JP, you bring up an interesting point. We all know how old the Capitals roster are, and we keep waiting for this next wave of talent to come. I mean, it's been I can't even think of the last Capitals player to break through and make significant contributions at the big club, someone that they drafted internally. I mean, who'd be
maybe
the last
Vrana, one? You would say?
Vrana or Siegenthaler. And then I guess Samsonov has got to be the guy. So I'll give him that one, but it's been a while. And I mean, so I'm not going to read through the whole roster projection, but what we're getting from kind of the daily faceoff, they don't have any youth in this Capitals lineup. I'll tell you that it's basically the same exact roster from last year with Kempney getting big minutes and then TVR instead of Chara. So it's an interesting dynamic because the Capitals are still one of the oldest teams in the league, but they still don't have a ton of wiggle room to get these guys in, or they wouldn't if Nicklas Backstrom wasn't hurt. So, John, real quick again before I pivot back to you, Greg. John, what does Backstrom's injury right now, as bad as it is, how does it give an opportunity to those kind of young forwards that you were just talking about?
Well, I mean, it's a couple of different issues here that you bring up. First of all, you know, we don't know how bad Backstrom's injury is, but it sure sounds like they're getting ready to be without him for a decent amount of time. What that means, who knows? You know, he's officially listed as week to week. I saw Lars Eller say they're getting ready to do without him for a little while. So I think it's safe to say that it's you know, he's not going to be there opening night. He's not going to be there probably for a little while. And I don't think this is a surprise to the Caps. And the more you think about it, you know, I think it's probably one of the reasons that Evgeny Kuznetsov is still here, because here's a guy clearly that they have been frustrated with and to my mind were ready to part ways with over the summer. But, you know, certainly you weren't going to get full value for Kuznetsov. And if you're going to trade a guy like that for pennies on a dollar, you can only do it when your roster is not going to be significantly crushed by a move like that. But, you know, they probably have known for a while that Nick Backstrom wasn't going to be ready and that he's got this lingering thing. And, oh, by the way, it's the kind of injury that guys get when they get older, and they kind of, you know, he's already had a hip surgery, and you know, who knows where it goes from here. But, you know, for a team that fancies itself a contender, you could not start the season without Backstrom and without Kuznetsov. So they're left once again kind of hoping and praying that Evgeny Kuznetsov of May 2018 somehow walks through that door in the locker room and can carry the team down the middle early on. I mean, even Lars Eller's maybe a little nicked up to start the preseason. So I think that Backstrom's injury, I mean, he led them in scoring last year, you know, by a decent amount. I mean, they play like 56 games or whatever they played. He had 10 more points than any other forward on the team. He put up big numbers. Obviously, you can't overstate how important Nick Backstrom is to this team. But him being out does provide opportunity. We'll see where Peter Laviolette goes with that opportunity. You know, you could see a guy like McMichael getting time. You could probably also see a guy like Nick Dowd moving up and getting third line minutes with Eller on the second line and some plug playing on the fourth line, you know, given NHL coaching orthodoxy and whatnot. But so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. It's a lot of cap space that they could theoretically play with in the short term if they put him on long-term injured reserve. But it does get to the bigger point. This is not a young team, as you said. You know, probably the oldest team in the league, and that's even with getting rid of
Chara. I think they're the oldest team by two full years on average, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's with getting rid of Zdeno Chara. So, you know, but that doesn't, you know, that in and of itself isn't a death knell. You know, age doesn't, you know, mean that they're not good. I think the what you talk about the infusion of young talent. The real problem isn't the infusion of youth in that equation. It's the infusion of talent in that equation. And, you know, do they have enough of that? You know, they traded their best young player. And this is, you know, Brana gone, you know, on the heels of a guy like Burakovsky being gone. And, you know, Sprong is a good young player that they picked up who fills some of that void, I think. But the reality is, obviously, you know, guys like Oshie and Ovechkin aren't getting any younger. They need probably the Tom Wilsons of the world to take a step. But who knows how much room he has really to improve his game. Mantha certainly has to be a good goal scorer and a productive member of this team. So, you know, what they're lacking to me isn't, you know, youth as much as talent. And there is talent there to be sure. But, you know, will it come together? Will it show? With Nick Backstrom out, it makes it that much harder.
Yeah, it's a good point, John. And, you know, the one thing with age, though, is you do expect more injuries.
Sure.
And that's definitely a concern, especially with the talent pool not being as deep as it maybe has been in the past. Greg, I want to get your take as well. I mean, first, Backstrom being out, we know how important it is. But, you know, how do you see the roster shaking out with him being sidelined for at least the first few weeks?
Well, I mean, maybe welcome to a really big NHL role, Nick Dowd, right? Like, I mean, he if Backstrom's out for an extended period of time, I have my skepticism that Laviolette's going to really play McMichael. It seems like the Caps think he still, you know, would benefit with some time in the AHL. So, you know, you would think that he might get moved up in the lineup. Now, you know, I think that there's kind of an interesting question with Nicholas Backstrom, which is, you know, I think first we have to say analytically, is this a week to week where they're just being cautious and is he going to be out for maybe the first few weeks? And we say, all right, it's early. Let's play the kids. Let's see what happens. You know, with the kind of first month or so in the NHL being a mess anyways, maybe you look at that as being an opportunity to play a, you know, McMichael, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, if this is a more long-term thing, and it might well be, and it also might be the issue that even if Backstrom returns, that this might be an injury that really kind of hobbles him for a while, you know, then I think it's more of an open question about how they exactly see this roster shaking out. Yeah, I think that we talk about, obviously, Backstrom being potentially on LTIR would free up some cap room, but, you know, if you're expecting him to come back in the second half of the year, which, God, I would hope that it's not that long-term, then, you know, that you can't really do that much with that cap space. So I think it's a really difficult question. I think Laviolette and the Capitals have to figure out exactly, you know, what do they see the role of McMichael being, at least for the first, you know, half of the year? Do they think that they can get by with a, you know, kind of Kuznetsov, Eller, Dowd and question mark center tandem, which, man, that doesn't sound super promising. But, you know, maybe they think that that could work. Maybe they think that Dowd is ready for a third line center role. I don't think he is, but maybe he is. So, yeah, I think that that's kind of an interesting question with Backstrom is both, you know, one, is this going to be a long-term thing and kind of what are the ramifications if it are? And two, you know, if he's going to be playing with something through the whole year, you know, that could be a problem in its own right. I mean, Backstrom himself is not the fastest player anymore. And, you know, I obviously his game isn't going to depend on him being super quick, but you know, if he loses another half step or so because of that, could this impact him in a, you know, kind of way that we couldn't foresee right now? And so these are all just open questions. And like, I mean, part of the thing with the Caps being as good as they have been for as long as they have is that the roster, you know, the prospect pool kind of diminishes over time. And particularly in a hard cap league with a, you know, drafting where a kind of a system where if you're good, you draft lower in the NHL draft. And so I think some of this is probably inevitable, but it doesn't really do us any good right now because, you know, the prospect pool isn't very good. So I think it's just kind of an open question.
Yeah, I mean, I keep trying like to bait the hooks here, get you guys to talk about how good the Caps' two young forwards are, but neither of you guys are really jumping on this Mike.
Yeah. Well, we don't really know, right? Like, I mean, we've Connor McMichael has played one game in the NHL and he's looked good in Hershey. He's scored wherever he's gone. But I, you know, like sometimes with prospects, you just don't know. And I think he could be really good. But, you know, the other question is really good a top six center like right now? Is that what it is? You know, is that the could he develop into a top line center? I don't know, but you know, or is really good for him maybe like a, you know, kind of middle six forward right now? I don't know what that is, and there's no way of knowing until he's really in the NHL and playing regularly.
And what better opportunity to do that, Greg, than when you got a nice glaring hole in your middle six?
I mean, I would play him. I think I would. I'm just the, you know, I don't know if Laviolette's going to see it the same way. That's kind of my question.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a concern. I mean, if I'm remembering correctly, the Capitals had a ton of injuries down the stretch last year, and there was an expectation that we might see some youth infused into the lineup during when that took place, and that is not what we saw happen. I believe we saw Lars Eller step up and play more of that enhanced role instead.
And we saw them play with like 11 forwards, right? Like a decent amount of time too.
Yeah. So I guess my last question on this, John, is who do you think takes Backstrom's minutes right now?
I mean, I think it's going to be by committee. It's going to be the offensive minutes probably go to Kuznetsov. Kind of the two-way minutes might go to Eller, and you know, Dowd probably takes up some of the defensive minutes, but. You know, on Dowd, it's going to be hard for Laviolette not to to go with him as kind of a safer choice. And, you know, not only is he a guy who, you know, plays those defensive minutes and, you know, does all right in them, I suppose. That fourth line had some ups and downs last year. But he had 11 goals last year, and, you know, that's as many goals, you know, that's two fewer goals than Tom Wilson had. That's, you know, that's more goals than Eller had. That's more goals than Kuznetsov had. That's two fewer goals than Sprong had, for crying out loud, you know. So, you know, he's shown some pop, and if you've got a responsible, you know, veteran center who wins 56% of his draws or whatever – and can pop in a few goals, you know, a coach has been around as long as Peter Laviolette, it's hard to see him not gravitating towards a dude like that and elevating him for maybe a bigger role over giving it to a kid. But, you know, maybe I'll be surprised and maybe McMichael will get big minutes. But, you know, to me, it's probably going to be mostly Kuznetsov, Eller, and Dowd. You know, I think that would be kind of the conservative betting at this point.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It does beg the question of how you ever get youth into the lineup if you don't take advantage of when the roster has a spot for them. I do 100% agree with you that the most likely outcome is not to give one of those guys big minutes. Moving on from that one, I did want to talk about some happier news. The NHL has been very compliant with getting their players vaccinated, and the Capitals are 100% vaccinated. I know, Greg, this was something that you were interested in speaking about, so I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to hear that the Capitals are fully vaccinated. We were kind of talking a little internally, but that it's really nice that, like, we kind of, I mean, the Capitals were so decimated by COVID last year. I mean, so was everyone, both in the world and the NHL. You know, and it kind of feels like we've come a long way, right? Like, in terms of at least the NHL, I think it shows, for one, that mandates work, I think, in a lot of ways. You take with that politically what you will, but I think in the NHL, we've seen the kind of NHLPA and the NHL as a whole really start to crack down on, you know, unvaccinated players and say, okay, look, you know, you don't have to get the vaccine, we guess, but there's going to be real consequences if you do. And just kind of seeing, you know, the players, I think, make what is clearly the right decision is really a relief. And, you know, it's, I think you can even see that with the news today of Mackenzie Blackwood potentially making a mess of, you know, the New Jersey goaltending situation because he insists on getting his news from some interesting sources on Instagram. I'll say it like that. But, you know, I think it's just nice in a way that we don't have to worry about it from a Capitals angle, that we can kind of just focus on hockey. I mean, this is a team that just lost so many games last year, so many COVID man games to really important players. And the fact that, you know, these players, I think, for the Capitals all chose to make the right decision is both important, you know, from a team standpoint, but I think there's also a societal benefit to it as well. Just to see famous sports athletes make the right decision around this is just kind of a good thing in general.
Especially with Bradley Beal being on the other side of history.
Oh gosh. Well, that's apparently his wife is a big anti-vaxxer or something, right?
I can't speak to that, but I can, you know, people were asking me last week, you know, why haven't the Caps, why hasn't Monumental and Capital One Arena made it a requirement that you be vaxxed or show a, you know, recent negative test or whatever it is, like so many other arenas have around the league, the NHL and other leagues. And the only reason I could come up with why they wouldn't do it, especially being in such a vax-friendly environment as this area is, the only reason I could come up with is that they must have a prominent player or more than one player who's not willing to. And they can't very well say, okay, fans, you have to get vaxed, even though one of our stars isn't vaxed. And, you know, I didn't know who that was. That is the only reason I could come up with. But Bradley Beal apparently is that guy. Now, is that the reason? I don't know. But it makes sense to me. And it's the only thing I could think of. So, you know, bottom line is these vaccines are safe and effective. And they're our best way out of this horse shit. And, so everybody go get your jabs and be like the Caps.
Yeah, I like that. It's really not that bad, I promise. It's it wasn't, I think I had side effects on the second one for like a day and then it was fine. That was it.
I would love to see what percentage of our listenership is vaccinated. I think that'd be really interesting. But
I would hope it's 100%. Please get vaccinated. Please, please, please.
Now, moving on to the season here, guys. We've got only 2 minutes left. When we kind of look ahead here and we try to think about what we want to see from the Capitals this season, and not just what do we want, but what do we think is realistic? And I think, to me, this is a year where the question is going to be playoffs. I mean, are the Capitals a true contender? I don't think any of the three of us are going to say that they are anywhere close to the level of contender they were in, you know, 14 through 18. They certainly don't have that same level of star power, but they, in my mind, they're still a team that, that should compete and should make the playoffs. John, where do you see them?
I mean, it probably is. They're probably in maybe a third tier, a second tier in the East. If you have a team like Tampa at the top, and I think you could probably throw teams like Carolina in there, and Boston, that teams that probably are truer contenders than the Caps are, at least on paper right now. So I think the Caps could be a second tier team. I think that they're in an incredibly difficult division, and I think that it's going to be a bit of a dogfight to see who gets in. There aren't enough spots for all the teams in the division to make it into the playoffs. All the good teams, obviously, you know, are the Caps way better than Pittsburgh, Philly, or the Islanders, or maybe even the Rangers? I don't know that I'm prepared to say they're clearly better than those teams. I think they're clearly not as good as Carolina. So I think you're probably looking at four teams, maybe five teams, looking for three spots. And I think the Caps are certainly one of those teams. And, you know, history says that they find a way and they get there. And so I think they will. But, you know, this is not a team that ever is going to be happy just making the playoffs. And they've had, as we know, three straight first round losses after winning the cup. And, you know, at some point that really needs to change, because just making the playoffs isn't good enough. And so, you know, if we're talking about how do you measure success for this team, I would think it starts with getting to the second round of the playoffs. Uh-huh. And I think that you could fairly say anything past winning two rounds would certainly be a successful season, and probably a little surprising to me. But so I guess I have them pegged for making the playoffs and losing in the first round. I mean, I guess that's a pretty safe bet around these parts the past handful of years. So
I can't believe you'd be predicting a Caps first round loss.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, but this time I think I might be betting it on just, you know, the actual quality of what I expect to see, and it not being necessarily an upset loss. Not that last year was an upset loss or anything, but you know, I think that's the caliber of team they are right now. They're probably a slightly above fringe playoff team in a very tough division that is capable of going on a run, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah, that's about where I feel too. Greg, let's get some optimism from enthusiastic Greg.
Yeah, all right. Well, let me give my best shot with some optimism here, which is the Metro Division is good, but I think it's also weird, right? Like, I think you would definitely say Carolina and the Islanders are probably the kind of consensus favorites at this point. But the Hurricanes lost, maybe you would say their best player, maybe their second best player. I don't know how you want to rank Dougie Hamilton, but like Dougie Hamilton, him leaving makes that team, I think, a lot worse. And they made their goaltending a lot worse, too. So, you know, the problem, of course, is that where did Dougie Hamilton go? He went to the Devils, which are kind of a consensus sleeper team there. So, you know, and then the Islanders, everyone's like, all right, like they, you know, they've made the Eastern Conference Finals all these years in a row and all that. But I think it's also worth saying they haven't always been a great regular season team. In fact, I think last year they... Yeah, I also agreed with that too. But also, like, the Caps dominated them, you know, in a couple of games at the end of the year. So, you know, and they didn't look great going into the playoffs. So, you know, I don't actually. actually know what to make of it. I see a lot of teams in the Metro Division that are kind of question marks. Like, I mean, do we want to say the Devils? They were awful last year and even worse the year before that, but they got a lot better. Are they a fringe playoff team? Maybe. You know, I think the only obvious team here that's going to be bad is the Blue Jackets. But, you know, I think you could see the Rangers, Flyers, and Penguins all. I don't know what they're going to do, right? And, like, I mean, put the Capitals in there, too, and you say, all right, like, I don't know if there's a super obvious number one team. And so maybe the Capitals are right there just because the rest of the division got really weird. And I don't know that there's a, you know, a super surefire number one team in that division. So, like, that would be my best case with optimism. And, you know, I think the other thing that's worth noting is that, again, the Capitals do really well in the regular season, and they just always have. And they've done well in years where you don't think they would have, right? So I, you know, and maybe a little more optimistic on the Capitals in the regular season. The problem, I see two big problems with them. You know, one is that we talk about age, right? And that's, you know, they're potentially starting out hot and then they get tired and then they, you know, because they're older and this is going to be a full season for the first time in a few years. So, you know, maybe they really start to struggle, particularly maybe in, like, you know, February or something like that. You could see that. But I think the other bigger problem is that I think for better or for worse, the Caps are locked into this roster, right? Like, if they struggle, I don't really know the super obvious place that McClellan would go to try to improve the team, right? Like, all of your best players are your top dollar players. And if they don't perform, there's just no obvious solution for the Capitals midseason, I think, except maybe play McMichael, but I don't think that that's a panacea for their problems. So I guess that's my best hope of optimism, right? Is saying that I think the Metro is a little bit weird. I have a tough time getting a read on who's going to be the best team. So, you know, maybe you say the Caps are in there in the sense that everyone except for the Blue Jackets is in there. But if the Caps struggle to start the year, I think that it could be locked into a pretty problematic situation. So, Adam, that's my best attempt at optimism. How did I do?
Sounded fine, I guess.
All right. I'll take that.
not sure it sold me, but hey, that's all right. All right, very quick, rapid fire. If I set the over under for Ovechkin goals at 39.5, JP, are you over or under?
I'm under.
Greg?
Interesting. I think I'm over, actually. I think that I'm also pegging this on two things. I'm going to hope that he stays healthy because that's obviously the most important thing for him. But I also say that, you know, if the Caps struggle and start to look mediocre, I think this might be the year where you really start to see them say, all right, like, let's put all of our eggs in the Ovechkin basket. Maybe we keep playing him to just rack up the goal numbers. I hope that they're not in that kind of position to have that be the pressure, but if they are, this might be the first season where I think you really start to see that. And so maybe they kind of, you know, get him over the finish line of 40 there.
But what would that even look like? Like, I mean, is there a planet on which the Caps are not currently trying to get Alex Ovechkin shots? I don't think so. That's their whole fucking strategy is feed this guy the puck and get him shots. So, like, what does, you know, saying, oh, right, fuck it, we'll just get Ovi some goals. How does that differ from their, like, basic game strategy, you know, which is basically, fuck it, let's get Ovi some goals, because no one else on this team scores. Yeah. So, you know, that's if they're headed in that direction, they're just, I mean, that's where they are, you know, that's kind of where they are. So, I mean, I don't know necessarily. Everybody talks about, you know, the Caps have to decide whether they're all in on Ovi chasing the record or whether they're in on building a team. And that's a false dichotomy because, you know, I haven't seen a Caps team yet that hasn't relied heavily on Alex Ovechkin scoring goals. And, you know, to the extent that they're a better team and still trying to win, more Ovi goals come along with it and feed it. And, you know, I don't see them as distinct exercises, but you know,
can I give what I think would be I'm gonna give a rough metric for it, which is I have Ovechkin's time on ice played per game at 5-on-5 for the last few years. And it, you know, one of the interesting things is that after seeing a couple years where it declined, it went way up in 2018-19, and it started declining again in 19-20 and 21. And I think if you start seeing Ovechkin with like 15-plus average 5-on-5 time per game, that would be a pretty substantial rise from last year. And I think that might be kind of where we start to say, okay, like this is kind of what the Caps' plan is at this point. And it's not a perfect dichotomy, but I think that that would be kind of the thing I would look for.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I guess we'll see is how much they can play him. But I mean, either way, they're riding him and they're sinking or swimming in large part on his production. So
you're saying
we shall see,
because his production will be below 40 goals.
I think his production is below 40 goals this year.
Yeah, that's that is what you told us. That was really my big one.
I think he gets 42 goals. That's my prediction. So we'll see.
Very specific. I think he's 45 if he plays the full season.
45! There's that string optimism.
He's going to do great, guys. He's going to do great. You know, he doesn't even need to play with Nick Backstrom, apparently.
All right, give me more of these rapid fire. I mean, that was like a 20-minute rapid fire. Yeah. So
Kuznetsov, 59.5.
Points?
Yes.
Under.
Greg.
Yeah, well, I think he gets more power play time, so then
it's rapid fire, Greg.
Oh, all right, okay, fine. I'm going to say slightly over.
Backstrom, 41 games played.
Oh god. I'm going to go over on 41 games played because it will literally kill my soul if it's not.
Greg.
I'm gonna go under. I think that this is a pretty big problem, actually. That's my prediction, but maybe I'm wrong.
Okay, hold on, you set the benchmark for this last one really fast. My thing isn't loading, sorry.
This is the kind of preparation that we've come to.
I had it all, it wasn't there.
Premier Capitals podcast.
175 penalty minutes, Tom Wilson.
I mean, under
that. What did he get last year? Like, what was, or well, like, what is a typical Tom Wilson year?
In 47 games last year. 90, but he did much better the year before that. 93 and 68. He was 187 in 78 and 17-18.
Yeah, I mean, under. Because he'll be suspended for half the fucking season.
JP, you're really, really bringing the bringing us up here, right?
Right.
All right, Greg.
I mean, under that,
fire.
Yeah. All right. Real quick, String. You also said when Alan May came on that Wilson does need to play with that kind of sandpaper and at least be on the edge and not be, you know, kind of playing passively. So I hope it's under, obviously, but like, you know, I hope he's not getting suspended for big hits. That said, I do want to see him get engaged, and if that involves a little bit of a raise in penalty minutes, that's a trade-off I could take.
It'll be under. I set the line way too high, but that I put money. Guys, those are the rapid fires I had. The Wilson one, I lost my number. So we got what we needed. John, any
wait, can I do a rapid fire for you two just real quick?
Sure.
Over under John Carlson getting 5 Norris votes this year.
Like 5 first place votes or 5 total votes?
The 5 total votes is going to be low, isn't it?
Yeah, way low.
Hopefully.
All right. Let's say 30.
30 total votes. You can go first.
All right, how many people vote, John? Is it like it's the whole
fucking Athletic, yeah. And then yeah, like 5 other people. So
people? Maybe, or is it less than that now?
I don't know. It's like 125 or something like that. Yeah, so right, like a quarter of them have him in his top in their top five.
Maybe we're getting bogged down in semantics too much here. So I'm gonna use a lawyer weasel world. Will John Carlson get significant Norris votes next year?
I have that he will not be a finalist, but he might be have a significant voting presence, is what I believe.
I don't think he's going to put up the offensive numbers to support a candidacy like that. So I think that he, you know, for the sake of argument, I say he finishes outside the top five in Norris voting.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he's safely outside the top five. I'm a little pessimistic, although he'll get his points on the power play. So, you know, that'll help.
All right. Yeah, that great power play that just killed it in the playoffs and just keeps being impressive as hell with under Blaine Forsythe's leadership. It's
the sun rises and Blaine Forsythe is in charge of the Capitals power play.
Gosh,
been a long time now. But gentlemen, I know we have a bit of a hard stop coming up. So, do either of you have anything you want to touch on here before we wrap this thing up?
I don't.
Yeah, I'm good. It'll be interesting to see how Sprong does this year. That's my last thought.
And congratulations to Luke on his engagement.
True.
All right, guys.
Daniel Sprong.
On behalf of myself, well, John, why don't you give everyone your socials? I apologize. I didn't give you.
No, whatever. At Japers Rink.
All right, there we go. Greg.
And at GregY_JR, find my stuff at Jaber's Rank.
All right, perfect. Guys, thanks again for listening. On behalf of the team, this is Adam Stringham at Stringham A, and we're looking forward to servicing you guys again this season.